Hello and good morning to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and today we are going to continue looking at our study in the book of Genesis. And of course, up to this point, I've told you there's been a lot of, I've got a really bad cough today. We have had a lot of discussions about the beginnings of civilization, how mankind comes to be, and then we look at and see how mankind has ended up in a position where God feels the need to hit the automatic reset button. And of course, we talked about flood and Noah's Ark and how all of those things came to be. And just over the last 2 weeks, we have, of course, landed the Ark on top of Mount Ararat and are now looking at how mankind begins to spread. And last week we talked specifically about the Table of Nations. And we compared the curse that was given to Canaan's descendants, Ham's son, Canaan's descendants, in latter half of chapter 9, going into chapter 10 and how that played out. We talked about a couple of traditional ideas and beliefs that had been taught. That this, applied to African peoples, African cultures, that they were a part of this curse. And, you know, we talked about that there may be some likelihood that they were touched by it, but more than likely, it was exclusive to just the Canaanite peoples, hence their forefather Canaan, being the one who received the curse. And there's some debate about that, but we talked about the fact that those are the peoples who are no longer around, no longer left, thus fulfilling the prophecy and the curse that was given by Noah. And we looked at how Shem and Japheth's descendants spread it out. We told you about the map, you know, where you see Japheth's descendants are essentially where a lot of Gentile nations come from. You have the Greeks, the Germans, the French, the English, all of these different Northern European cultures, and even over into Russia and some of the northern parts of Asia, Mongolia, Ukraine, these areas are all the descendants of Japheth. And then, of course, we looked at Shem, who had the Arabian Peninsula, essentially parts of India, things of this nature. And today we're going to be looking at another part of Genesis, and I know this is getting probably redundant for you guys, but a lot of Genesis is controversial, and the reason for that is because there's a lot of traditional ideas that have been taught. There are what I would refer to as radical views, where sometimes the Word of God is under-spiritualized, but then there's people that over-spiritualize it. There are people that look at it strictly scientifically. There are some that form ideas and opinions about the level of knowledge and technology and advancement of these peoples based off of today and what we're accomplishing in today. So there's just a lot of controversy that goes into Genesis, and a lot of button heads, for lack of a better way of putting it, about how this works. And today is no different. We're going to be talking about the Tower of Babel, okay? There's a huge amount of controversy that surrounds the Tower of Babel. And of course, the latter half of Genesis chapter 11 is setting us up biographically for Abram, aka Abraham, is how most of you probably know him, and his life and where he's at and all of these things. But the reason that the Tower of Babel, I think, is so controversial is, number one, it challenges a lot of modern ideas, cultural ideas, and it challenges them in a way that a lot of scientists cannot necessarily negate what's going to happen here, okay? Another reason for this is there's a lot of controversy about what these people were trying to accomplish at the Tower of Babel. And I've heard many, many things. I've heard they were trying to build a tower to heaven. When I was a younger preacher, younger pastor, went through Genesis, that was more the approach that I took on what they were taking. I have since then gone back over and looked at this and been like, no. That doesn't even make rational sense. Even for sinful men, there's never been a time we assume that we could do the impossible, okay? There's something else going on here. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. I've seen some people that believe that due to the fact that before the flood, people lived for 800-900 years, that there are even some people that believe that where we are in modern times, technologically speaking, that these types of things had already existed by that point because these people had lived for so long. And there are some that actually believe the Tower of Babel was an attempt at a rocket ship. And you might be giggling about this, but this is truly something that I've heard, something I've even heard my own family members talk about before, which that's neither here nor there. But anyway, there are just a lot of crazy, crazy, crazy things that surround the Tower of Babel. And this is what I need you to understand about this, okay? This is not a metaphorical thing. The Tower of Babel existed. It was indeed real. In fact, I'm trying to remember, he is a Greek historian it probably would have been early AD, very early, first, second century, may have been BC, I can't remember. But his name is Herodotus, and he had actually seen the Tower of Babel. It was still standing in his day and time. So this is not a metaphorical thing. This is not a part of Genesis that we need to look at, kind of like with creation where I was telling you, you know, this is what's going on. This is what's going on. This isn't really discussing this. It's more talking about this. It's a very literal story. It's a very straightforward story. If you take it as any more than that, you're going to end up in places you shouldn't be. This is a real event. This did happen. And what we have to ascertain, what we're going to be looking at today is, okay, what was the goal of these peoples? What is it that they are trying to accomplish by building this tower? And once we get to that, once we get to understanding what it is they were trying to actually do, the story of the Tower of Babel will make a whole lot more sense to you, and it will hopefully clear up maybe some crazier notions that you have been heard or been taught, things of this nature. So, all right. Here we go. Let's get started here. Genesis chapter 11. My Bible will pull up. There we go. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. And they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime had they for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Okay, so there's a lot that's going on here. I think a lot of people don't realize that the Tower of Babel is actually only that first paragraph in chapter 11. The rest of it is dedicated to the lineage and the biography of Abram and his father, grandfather, all these things. So we have to really break down what's going on here at the beginning of chapter 11. Notice that it's a continuation almost of chapter 10. We talked about the table of nations, and then we open into chapter 11 with, and the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. I've told you guys before when we're doing this podcast that Hebrews tend to continue an idea and then go back historically in time to an earlier moment and continue telling another part of this story. So with the table of nations, we saw, of course, Ham, Shem, and Japheth's descendants, right? We see them all moving on and growing as a group, and we see where they all spread eventually to and where they all ended up at eventually. What's going on here in chapter 11, in my personal opinion, predates majority of what's going on in chapter 10. Because of the fact, what are we trying to accomplish? We want to build a city and a tower. Why? Lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. So as Ham, Shem, and Japheth's families are growing, we're moving slowly to the east to where we're going to eventually end up according to chapter 10, okay? But before all of that really takes off and ends up going on, we see that these families are sticking together. That's direct disobedience to God. God said, go forth and multiply and what? Cover the earth, spread out, go, you know, you get your spot here, you get your spot here, you get your spot here. Which I think it's kind of interesting that God tells them to do that, because I don't think it's strictly a biological, we need to get humans all over the planet thing. But I also think it shows the principle of when a man forms a family, he's supposed to get out. He's supposed to go get his own place, get his own area, raise his family. There's a lot of conflicts that tend to come with people that all stay grouped together, okay? And so God is saying, spread out. And part of this is also to slow down the wickedness of men's hearts. Because as you can already see, we're already being disobedient to God. We haven't been on the ark that long. And we're already kind of starting to go back to that old way. And there's a very, very big, big catalyst as to why we end up going in this direction. And chapter 11 tells it to you right off the bat. The whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Now, this is very, very, very interesting, especially to look at in our day and time. Because modern linguists all agree that language was too complex and too advanced for mankind to have invented on their own. Meaning that there's no way that any of us, even evolutionarily speaking, now they'll tell you that a certain part of your brain evolved and that led into speech. That is not true. But if that was true, we would not be the only creatures on this planet that have languages, okay? There are universal symbols, right? If you blow a raspberry, everybody kind of gets the idea you're mocking them. I could do that to somebody else and it's, yay, they're mocking me. If I made a funny face at you, that's a universal thing. If I whistled at you, that's a universal thing, okay? There are some, body motions, facial expressions, nonverbal cues that are universal in nature, but that is not language, okay? That is passing on a concept. That's not communicating on a complex level of you're dealing with articles and definitives and, you know, direct objects and indirect objects and nouns and verbs. That's not a complex thing. If I point my finger, and I have to point my finger 15 times before you finally figure out what it is that I'm pointing at, I'm not communicating on a complex level. I'm just communicating in a universal way of you kind of get the gist of what I'm doing. Modern linguists agree that there is no way mankind could have formed language on their own. Now, they will step back and punt to it was an evolutionary process and it just poof came into being. And that's one of the few things with evolution you will hear me say, poof, came into being, because they cannot explain it. Even macroevolutionists kind of give you a gist of what they believe occurred. Modern linguists who are trying to explain language and how it came to be literally revert to the poof, it came to be. That's kind of just how it works. But all of them will agree that there had to be one language and that man would not have been able to come up with language on his own accord. And some people go, oh, well, you know, what about the Cherokee? The Cherokee have an alphabet. Yeah, they already had a language in which a man created an alphabet or symbols to put together this language, okay? The actual concept of words and expressions and the structuring of language, we don't have the faculties to have come up with that on our own. It had to have started somewhere. So God already tells you that in the beginning, makes sense, we all came from the same people. There's one language and one speech, meaning that there's one way of communicating. Okay, it's kind of redundant in on itself. And what's really cool about the fact that we start out with this discussion that there's one language, there's one set of words, is that that is what's going to lead to all of the modern languages you know, and I'm going to explain that to you in a minute. But that is also the key in why man could become so evil so quickly. There's no communication barrier. There's no problems. There's no cultures. There's no differences amongst all of these people, which leads to everybody's in one big group. And when everybody's in one big group, little Tom has an idea that's pretty bad, and little Benny goes, oh, I bet I can make Tom's idea a whole lot better, and they feed off one another. Their sinfulness just feeds and feeds and feeds and feeds and feeds, and that happens in today's time. If you look at sexual taboos or sinful taboos just 40 years ago as compared to now, you can see that mankind started going, well, wait a minute, you're okay with it? Well, I'm okay with that, and now here we go. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. There was a time where homosexuality would have never been spoken of publicly, and now it's so far beyond just homosexuality. I don't know about the rest of you, but I lose count of how many letters that have been added to that acronym. Men just feed off of sin. They look for new and new ways and better ways and different ways to add to sinful notions. And that's what's going on here. God's wanting them to spread up, spread out, get out there, populate the world, take care of this, but also to limit the amount of evil that can be done. And there's this one key that's still left in the puzzle that is leading to all of this evil being done. So one language, one speech. It says, and it came to pass as they journeyed from these, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. Now, Shinar is Babylon. Okay, that's where modern Babylon was at. That was, you know, when you see the story of Nebuchadnezzar and all that, and later on in the Bible, Shinar is where all of that occurs. It is where Babylon was located. And so when we're looking here at Babylon and the things that are going on with this, we see that these peoples are spreading, and we know from our map that the majority of Ham's descendants took over that northern Africa and Canaan area, but they ended up in the middle of Shem's area with this land of Shinar, this plain of Shinar, in which we have a ruler that's of Ham's line. So we already kind of have this ungodly nature that's going on in Ham's people anyway, which leads to this decision of, okay, we found this place, we're going to dwell here. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. Okay, in this verse, this is where I think you're going to find out exactly what it is these people are trying to do. Remember, in the beginnings of Genesis, when Cain murdered Abel, Cain is in direct disobedience to God. He doesn't want anything to do with God. Cain then left, and he did what? Well, he started to build what we would call modern civilization. He puts together a city. And what's the purpose of putting together that city? Well, if we all come together as humanity and we work together, then we can disobey God, we can disregard God, we can accomplish things by our own power collectively. Okay? And so what's happening here is what's already happened before. You have this group of individuals that are moving slowly across the east, spreading out. They come to a place they like, that they want to settle there. This is Ham's descendants leading the show who are already in disobedience to God. They don't like God. They don't want anything to do with God. Canaan had already been cursed of God via Noah giving the prophecy of what was to come with them. And so for them, this is just a situation of what was going on before the flood. We need to figure out how to stop having to be dependent on God. And what's funny about this is that your food, the earth, the things that God allows you to have, God is always in control. Whether you're lost or saved, God is always in control. The concept of we are going to come together and go against God, friend, all God's got to do is send a plague and break that party up. But here we're going to try it again. And what's amazing about this is this style of architecture that they are describing was used throughout Babylon until it fell to the ground under the Mede and the Persian Empire and all these things, okay? So this is a very interesting situation. We have these people that are advanced enough, they know how to kiln bricks and make bricks for themselves and set up cities. But this idea of slime is that of like asphalt or mortar or concrete, meaning that we're not just building a city and a tower that's Lego blocks all stacked on each other. We are waterproofing this thing. We're making it permanent. We want a solid, steady structure. So we're going to come together. We're going to build this city. And notice what they said. It says, and they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. So we get together, we start creating these bricks, creating this mortar. We're going to build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. They're not attempting to build a tower to heaven. What they are doing here, they're waterproofing this city. They're waterproofing this tower. What was it that just destroyed mankind not 100 years before? God sent a flood. They're disobedient to God. They do not trust God. They do not think God will keep his promises. All of this, of course, is because of their own relationship with God, not because of God. God's already made a promise. I'll never flood the whole world again. I'll never destroy mankind by a flood again. But because they don't want to rely on God, they don't want to have to be obedient to God, and they're turning their backs on God, they don't want to fully trust God to keep his promise because they're not keeping theirs. They're not upholding their side of the deal here either. And so they put together a city and a tower that they think could withstand another flood. On top of that, when you look at these ancient peoples, the number one thing that they always do is create some sort of religion. At a basis, mankind has a natural tendency towards worship because of the fact you are a three-part being. You are made in the image of God, which means that you know inside your brain that there is a higher authority. Now, whether or not you choose to acknowledge the fact that God is there and that God is in charge is up to you. But you are already pre-programmed with it, and they understood. We need to get a city and a tower. We need something that we can use to go against God if God decides to do this flood again. We need it to reach up to heaven, not only for the fact that the whole world was flooded at a massive level, a level enough that the mountains were covered, but also that throughout Babylon's history, all of their religious idolatry was completely around astronomy. So that we're going to set up religion. We're going to set up a safe haven that we can go against God from. We need to what? Let us make us a name. Guys, if you become part of a group, okay, there comes this camaraderie with a group. If any of you played sports, you may have not liked half the people on your team, but once you became known as whatever your sports team name was, that's what you were. That's how you started to identify yourself. That happens even now. If I said, where are you from? You would say, well, I'm a citizen of the United States, right? That's immediately what you're going to say. You're not going to say your hometown, your state, or any of that. You're going to say the United States. Why? Because that's the collective group that you are a part of if you're in this country. Now, if you're outside the country listening to this, you get my point, okay? You're going to identify with that particular group. So they already knew we needed a city and a tower. We need a populace that comes together so that we can figure out our own problems and not have to rely on God. We need this tower to reach up to a point that we can make it into a high place, a place of worship, a place of idolatry. We need to have a name for all of our people so that, you know, you're a part of this group. You're a Shemite, a Hamite, whatever, okay? Because if we do not do these things, what's going to happen? We're going to be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth, meaning we're going to end up doing what God wanted us to do to begin with. The whole purpose of the story of the Tower of Babel is to show not only how these cultures and languages came to be, okay? Not to just give you that historical narrative, but it's also to show you that mankind did not change. Even this shortly after seeing the world destroyed by a flood, even after being around and seeing the things that God had done, they were still disobedient. They still didn't want to listen to God. They still didn't want to have anything to do with God. While they were the children of men who literally were on the ark and saw the whole world flooded, saw all of it happen, did not matter. They did not want to be obedient to God, and some of that was even the men who they themselves were on the boat and saw it happen with their own eyes and still did not want to follow and listen to God. So they come together and they do this, all right? They start working on this. And in verse 5, kind of something odd happens. It says, "And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded." Now, this idea of the Lord came down, it's kind of personal in nature. It's more than likely that this is a time where Jesus Christ appeared pre-New Testament times. And we see this from time to time. We see it with Abraham, with the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. God comes and meets him in his tent. These are what we call archetypes of Christ, meaning that there are times that Christ was here, but not in messianic glory, but rather appearing to take care of some sort of situation or issue that's going on, or to speak or address with somebody who is one of his children, okay? And of course, this all happened because there was no Bible written yet. We have a lot of things that are going on before God's full redemptive plan was available to us via the bookstore, okay? And so we have Christ, more than likely, if you wanted to say it's God that came down, whatever, doesn't matter. He's walking down amongst these people. It has a personal nature to it, meaning that he's there. And he comes to see the city and the tower which men build. This is one of those moments where I think God just has a sense of humor out of this world. He already knows what they're doing. He already knows what's going on. Excuse me. But to get more of a personal nature, to let you, the reader, know exactly the depths of what's going on, God even comes down and takes a walk amongst his people to see what they're doing. And the Lord said, "Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." So God comes, he looks and beholds of everything that they're doing, and there's subtle hints, of course, to the Trinity, us, as is mentioned many times here, meaning that it's God and all of the Godhead, you know, God being one God, yet there being these three separate manifestations of God's personality, okay? They talk together, and they recognize something that a lot of us never would have recognized. When we see a group of people doing something we don't want them to do, we attack, we invade, we do something of that nature, something that's direct, something that is physical, right? If we, like, for example, if you look at the Vietnam War or the Korean War, what was going on? Well, you had these Vietnamese oppressors in the North coming over and oppressing these Vietnamese in the South, same situation with Korea, North and South, okay? And our answer to dealing with the North was to go in physically, lead a war, do a fight, these kinds of things. Whereas 9 times out of 10, the best way to deal with some sort of issue or a group that is doing things that they should not be doing is to turn them on themselves. That's a tactic that a lot of people don't utilize anymore, which is kind of silly due to how far on we are in modern understanding of men and interactions and all of these things. But God already understood. God realized that the key to all this problem, the key to why men could continually come up with more and more wickedness, were continually up to no good, was because they could communicate with one another on an even playing field. God looks at that and he goes, "Oh, no, 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 no. if we continue to let this go on, we're going to end up back where we were before the flood. And when a lot of people look at the story of the Tower of Babel, they're like, had God punished them? No. God is showing mercy to mankind here by dividing up and splitting the languages and spreading the people out, because if we ended up back at the place we were before the flood, God wanted to destroy the whole world before the flood. If we only get off the boat for a couple hundred years and we're already back in that situation, what do you think's going to happen again? More than likely, God would have just ended the whole matter and been done with it. So God shows mercy here to these people by going, okay, we're going to confound their languages so they will spread out and do what they should have done initially anyway. It says, so the will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. And so the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon all the face of the earth. Sorry, I left that part out. And so what goes on here is that God just snaps his fingers. All of these people speak a different language. And you can only imagine how this is. They're building their city. They're building their tower. Everything's going good. You turn to talk to the guy next to you and you spout out what you believe is your normal language, your normal talk with these people. And he's looking at you going, well, and says something back and you don't understand what it is that he's saying back. And before you know it, you all think you're making fun of each other. And what happens? The ones that understand each other go their way. The ones that understand themselves go their way. And before you know it, all of that table of nations that we saw last week finally unfolds and takes place. These people spread out the way they were supposed to, and God stops them from being able to achieve sin on such a high rate anymore at this point. And a lot of people go, okay, well, I understand God may, you know, he confounded the language, meaning there's these different languages that are born and he spreads them out. But how is it then, Brother Zach, that that leads to all of these different groups of people that we see to get today? Well, let's think back to the Table of Nations. First of all, with the Table of Nations, we had to have a little bit of this discussion about racism. And I told you guys, there is no such thing. And if anybody has a problem with that, I'm sorry. It's the truth. I'm half Native American, half white, so I can say these things. All right. I have olive skin tone. I guess that gives me clearance to do it at this day and time. Okay. There is no such thing as races of humanity. There's not. There is but one race. It is the human race. If you go look at animals and how they're broken down, perfect example of this is the African cichlid. There's over 200 types of African cichlids. For those that don't know what that is, it's a fish, okay? Over 200 types. Notice I say types. There's not 200 races of cichlids. There is a race of cichlids. There are over 200 different types of cichlids. Same thing with humanity. We are all one race. There are various cultural differences, phenotype differences, meaning appearance, okay, that come into play. But that is because of what happens right here. You have these same groups of people, okay? I'm going to give you the example of how this works. This is basic biology 101. God confounds their languages. They spread out. All right, we're going to use three groups of people. You got one group goes to Africa. You got one group that ends up in the Arabian Peninsula. And you got one group that ends up in modern Europe. Okay? All three speak a different language. Now, this is what's awesome about language. And this is why we can use language to go back and study the Word of God. All right? I'm going to explain that to you in just a minute. You have these three groups. They speak different languages. Okay? This is not at all how this worked. I'm just going to throw these out there to give you this example to help you understand how this would give birth to what my idea is of there is no such thing as races. There's just cultures. Okay. In the North, we're going to say that group God made German. Okay. They speak German. Saudi Arabia, we're going to go with Aramaic. Okay. And in Africa, you can go with any of a different groupings of them. But for Africa, we're just going to say English because there's like 35 different languages in Africa. Okay. Now, here we are in the North. We speak German. We all have come out of what would have been the Arabian Peninsula. So what's our skin tone, do you think? We're kind of olive skin tone, right? More what you would see with a modern Jewish person. Probably a larger nose, facial hair, olive-colored skin to darker skin color. Okay? We go to the North. While we are in the North, we don't have nearly as much sunlight. This is the other good, fascinating thing about it. There's only so much melanin in your skin. If you don't have a lot of sunlight, you don't have a lot of beating sunlight, even if you have a darker complexion, you're going to start turning lighter because it's a different environment. Okay? So we have this group in the North. They're there for a couple hundred years. Throughout that time, you've got people living and dying left and right. You've got different genetic mutations that occur. You have a different environment, different level of sunlight. Yes, over about 1,000 years, you would have white, blue-eyed people, okay, who speak German. And then from that German, you're going to have some people, because this is a living language, that the words change their meaning. For example, strange, many years ago, usually spoke of in Old English, a homosexual nature of a relationship. Whereas today, strange is just, it's weird. It's odd. Okay. Living languages change and fluctuate. So out of German, you could have French and English and all these things that come to be in the North. If we take our group that's over in the Arabian Peninsula, they're not going to change a whole lot. We're already there, right? So we're going to go with Aramaic. They speak Aramaic. They're there. Their skin tone's not going to change very much. A lot of their things aren't going to change very much because they're not relocating. They just have a different language. But from that language, you can derive things like Hebrew. You could derive things like Chaldean and early ancient forms of Hebrew language. You can have all kinds of things that go on linguistically, but you're not going to see a lot of things change about the outward appearance of those human beings because they're not relocating any further than where they already are. Whereas our group in Africa that I said we're just going to say speak English because we're not getting into all those crazy languages that go on down there. I can't remember all of them and I can't explain half of them to you either. We're going to say they have English. Well, they're going to a place where there is sun 99% of the time. They don't really have a winter in Africa, okay? It stays very, very hot. It's very, very exposed to the sun most of the time. It's very close to the equator right there in northern Africa, okay? And, of course, as you're there, you're going through time. You've got a small group of people. You start to have differences and personality clashes, breakups in groups. You're going to start seeing the birth of all those different tribes you see in Africa, all those different languages, and different phenotypes, skin colors, things of this nature. They're going to be darker in Africa than they are in in the Arabian Peninsula because there's more sun, okay? All of this, what happens here at the Tower of Babel, creates modern cultures. Any culture you can think of, any grouping of people that you can think of, this is where it all happens. It happens because languages become confounded, people relocate, and then those specific physical characteristics that are better suited for that area eventually pan their way out. I'm so embedded in our politically correct culture. Goodness. An African people that would be moved from Africa, where they're used to burning hot conditions, they have dark complected skin to be able to not burn in that environment. If you throw them up in Europe in the middle of a snowstorm, first of all, they're going to stick out of this world to any of the animals they're hunting because they're darkly complected in the middle of the snow. And more than likely, the environment's going to kill them because their body has shifted to make the accommodation to a hotter, drier, more sunny area. That's all there is, guys. When you look at humanity, there's no black people, white people, Asian people, any of that. There is not. It doesn't exist. there's just different phenotypes, different cultures, different traditions and ideas. That's all that there really is at the end of the day. Humans are humans are humans, regardless of how they look. But that very basis, that very by nature divisiveness that comes into mankind, God put that there on purpose so that there would not be all this fighting and warring and sinning going on amongst these people. Because now in today's time, you see where we don't have as much of a language barrier. We don't have as much of a problem. We're beginning to understand what should be a very simple concept of we're all humans. That's starting to become a more natural thing. And now we start to see all of this unison that's going on in the world. And look at the way sin is evolving in the world. Sin in the last 5-6 years has become so much more publicly accepted than it's ever been in the history of mankind. Things that would have been taboo, things that would have been extremely inappropriate, even 300-500 years ago, are a norm now. Every time in history where mankind starts to become more unified, sin just exponentially shoots up the list. And so what God's attempting to do here is not cause hatred amongst humanity or any of those things, because of the fact that we know in our Bible we're supposed to love all people. But he's trying to create barriers to slow down the rate at which mankind is sinning so that the redemptive plan of man can be carried out before the world would need to be have an automatic reset button again or just destroyed altogether. And so from here, we have the basis of all of those things that we saw in chapter 10. And I told a lot of you last week with chapter 10 that it's more than likely after this takes place that the world would have divided into the continents we see now. I told you more than likely Pangaea was a real thing. There's a lot of scientific evidence to back it up. It doesn't have anything to do with evolution. It's simple tectonic movement of plates. But it would make sense that God would spread them all out and then divide the land. That would just add even more division and slow down again this rate of sin and idolatry and evil that mankind by nature seek and go towards. And so that's the whole point of the Tower of Babel. That's what's going on here. That's what God is attempting to do. And what's very interesting is that to follow this up, we have the lineage of Abram, later to be called Abraham, introduced. It says, these are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad, or you can say Arphaxad. I don't care. Either way it works for you, say it. As long as you get the name out, I'm on board with it. 2 years after the flood. And Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. And Arphaxad lived 530 years and begat Salah. And Arphaxad lived after he begat Salah 403 years. You start to see the life expectancy of these people dropping. And begat sons and daughters. And Salah lived 30 years and begat Eber. And Salah lived after Eber 403 years and begat sons and daughters. And Eber lived 430 years and begat Peleg. And Eber lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. And Peleg lived 30 years and begat Reu. And 207 years and begat sons and daughters. And Serug lived 30 years and begat Nahor. And Serug lived after he begat Nahor 200 years and begat sons and daughters. And Nahor lived 29 years and begat Terah. And Nahor lived after he begat Terah 119 years and begat sons and daughters. So that life expectancy starts to just tremendously drop. We know that after the flood, the conditions of the environment and the world did not in any way, shape, or form resemble what they were before the flood, which leads to this massive shortening of life expectancy. It says, and Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Okay. So we finally get to Abram. And Abram, of course, has his two brothers here and his father. It says, now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran begat Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees, which would have been up near Mesopotamia, near the Tigris-Euphrates River, this area. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, his half-sister, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came unto Haran and dwelt there, and the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. And so the latter half of chapter 11 leads you from Shem's line all the way to Abram. And then the last little itty bitty piece here at the bottom of chapter 11 tells you about what's going to happen with Abram and the situation of Abram and Sarai and how this story is going to all unfold. And he summarizes for you what ends up happening. They end up going to the land of Canaan. Now, they don't end up going exactly the way that this is painted for you, because I told you, Hebrew culture, we continue with one idea as we're leading into another one, and if we have to backtrack to insert the next point and idea, we will. That's kind of what's going to be going on here. We're going to be talking about that, how there's a lot of summaries that are done to summarize that point, meaning after all of this happens, after the Tower of Babel falls, this is how we get to Abram, and this is the problem. And then in chapter 12, we actually start talking about Abram and how God called him out of Ur and the problem with Sarai and the promise that God makes him. We kind of backtrack a little bit into that summary. But how does this apply to you, right? At the end of our show, we always give what's the application, what's the point. The first point is this. Humanity at its whole, at its core, and the hearts of all individuals is nothing but evil and sin continually. There is no such thing as looking for the good in people. There is not any good. God has made that point many, many, many times. The only thing good that can come into the lives of you and me and the world is the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. That's the only thing that will ever enter into our life that is indeed 110% good. The idea, the modern concept that there is this collective goodness in mankind, it's just not true, guys. Anytime that we come together, we are going to go about doing things we ought not to do. Anytime. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. No bones about it. No anything. Well, here we are just a few hundred years after the flood, and we're already right back to doing what we were doing before the flood. The very thing that led to the flood, here we are doing yet again. There is no such thing as goodness by nature within men. It's not there. It never has been there. We may have some that do less sin than others, some that have a better understanding of basic morality than others, but at the end of the day, without Jesus Christ, all we are going to be doing is wicked continually. And God has done everything that he possibly can do since the beginning of time to stop that progression of sin so that the redemptive plan for mankind could begin to unfold with the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So that's the first point. Do not buy into this idea that we can come together for some greater good. When we come together, we always come together to go about wickedness and evil unless we are coming together in the name of Jesus Christ. Secondly, numero dos. I want you to understand today that you are on here and you are somebody that is buying into the idea of racism or you are a practicer of it. There is no such thing. People are people are people. There are cultural differences. There are appearance differences. there are, you know, all kinds of maybe even traditions, value differences, things of that nature that occur across different cultural divides amongst people. However, at the end of the day, the Word of God, the love of God transcends all of those things. Anyone can be reached and be changed with the Word of God. Anyone can be saved, and we are all just people. There's nothing else to it. Everyone is just another human being, doesn't matter how they look. And here's another little coinkydink for you. We are all mutts. We all, if I trace your ancestry back, okay, my wife's father, my father-in-law, my wife's father, is an ancestry nut. He has traced his lineage back, I think, like the 1600s, last time I talked about him. But I'm going to tell you something. The further down that line you get, the more you begin to realize that every single one of us came from the same place. Do not buy into that. Do not hate other people because of their culture or their appearance or any of those things. Every single person on the planet needs to hear the Word of God, because at the end of the day, we were all capable of what is happening at the beginning of chapter 11. The only way any goodness, the only way anything good in the lives of man can come to be is through the preaching and the teaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Do not buy into this nonsense. Don't buy into the idea that there's a collective good in humanity. Do not buy into the idea that there are different races of people. There is no such thing. There is just people. And finally, number three, I want you to take a little look here at the name of Abram's father. It's Terah, okay? And the name of the places that they are going to end up at, Chaldees, means to be barren. Haran, specifically, means to be barren. As many of you, if you've studied the Bible before, and if you haven't, we'll see this in next chapter 12, but I'm just going to give you a small summarization. Abram is called of God to leave his country and to leave his family, because his family are idolaters, and we're going to talk about that next week. But he's called to leave all of that behind and go to a land that God will show him, right? Leave your family, leave your people, take your wife, take your stuff, go. Instead, though, Abraham is not disobedient to that. He believes in, he has enough faith to believe that God's telling him the truth, but he takes his family with him, and they end up in Haran for 7 years until his father dies. And then even after that, he still takes his nephew Lot and goes to this land that God's telling him about. The name Terah means delay, and the name Haran, which was where they abide at, is barrenness. If you and I are disobedient to God, doesn't matter if you have faith, doesn't matter if you believe God will do what he says he does. If you're disobedient to following those commands, to upholding that charge, just like the Tower of Babel people were, your life is always going to be spiritually delayed and barren until you get your act together and be obedient. Here, these people at the Tower of Babel, this idea of the one language and one speech, the confounding of the language is happening, that never would have had to happen if the people would have been obedient. All that nonsense that we're dealing with right now with this politically correct culture and all the garbage that's going on with that, none of this would have ever come into existence if mankind had been obedient to God at the very beginning, at the opportunity that they were given. Abram would not have ended up wandering all over the place before he finally settled in the promised land if he had been obedient to God and not delayed himself over and over and over and over again by being disobedient. Friends, as you're going about your week, I am absolutely positively calling on you, be obedient to the Word of God. Witness the way you're supposed to this week. Especially going into the weekend. I'm sure you'll see lots of people this weekend. Witness the way you're supposed to. Don't read, study the Word of God the way you're supposed to. And study, of course, indicates what? Deeper knowledge, deeper understanding. Apply it to your life. Don't just go, well, that was a really nifty story we talked about today on the podcast. Apply it to your life. Pray the way you're supposed to. Start seeing the world the way God sees the world, as opportunity for souls to be saved, not as races of people or a collective good in people or the nonsense that the world is telling you to believe about humans. Start seeing them the way that God sees them and start reaching out to them the way that God reached out to them. So, this has been Genesis chapter 11. I hope all of you have an excellent weekend. For some of the new listeners we saw pop up, it was great to have you guys with us. Hope you enjoyed it. You can go back. When we started this podcast, it was an overview of all the books of the Bible. And now we are working book by book, chapter by chapter, verse by verse through the entire Word of God. Hopefully we'll be done before I die. But go back, look over those. If you need help with a book to study, you can send comments, questions. I answer people's questions and emails and all that all the time. I may not get back to you very quickly, but I will get back to you within the same day. Because there's just a lot. We have a lot of different outlets that go out. Sometimes it can get